Hey, the Active family, this is David Reynosa, and today's episode is going to knock your socks off. I sit down with Chris over at Good Coast Studios, and his work is just absolute visual poetry. It's beautiful. He travels all over the world. And what really stands out to me about Chris is just his heart. He has a genuine heart for serving others and loving people through the work that he creates. And just before we start, I am so crazy excited to announce that our native presets are finally live again. We haven't actually launched these in almost a year, and the cart for them is only going to be open for the next few days. Now, these are the presets that I exclusively use on all my films. So if you want a little preview of those, you can go onto my Instagram page, Forestry Films, and just see all the clips there using those presets, as well as hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of other filmmakers exclusively use these native presets for their videos. Now, the reason I love these presets so much is I'm a minimalist at heart, and I want all my films to be authentic to how they were actually shot. And I developed these presets to make it so that skin tones are just beautifully popping and nothing is too extreme one way or the other. And honestly, ever since I started using these presets, and others have started using them as well, but just for me and myself, I have consistently gotten bookings from the way my colors look alone. I noticed a dramatic shift from before I started using this kind of custom color formula that's in the native presets, and then after. Couples would just be like, I'm drawn to your colors. They look so real, authentic, and they just look expensive, and we want to book you because of your colors. So if you're interested in that, definitely click the link in the show notes below. These presets will only be out for the next week or so, and then I'm closing the cart and may not open it for another whole year. So go down in the show notes and click that link, and you'll be able to go to the webpage and see a bunch of before and afters, and I'll also be on live chat on that webpage so you can ask me any questions that you have about the presets. And then before I get into it, I just want to remind you guys that we do have a Instagram account called theactive.co, and it features the best wedding filmmakers on the planet, their work. It's a fantastic place to go and get inspired for your next shoot, to just see what are filmmakers doing with portraits and bride prep and ceremony, and how can I weave that into my next shoot or next edit. And then I also post just incredible, insightful, actionable wedding tips on there as well. So you definitely want to go give it a follow. Now, without further ado, let's jump in to this interview. I kind of want to get started at the beginning of your story. So, Good Coast Studios, and I mean, you're married, you have two kids, you've been doing, I feel like you've been doing it for a while, but also I feel like you're brand new too. Like, I just started seeing you the last couple of years. So I'm more so curious for myself, like, how did you get into this? Where the heck did you come from? And did you just, yeah, like a year ago, pick up a camera and was like magically gifted, or kind of take me on that journey, mister?
Yes, that was exactly what happened. Okay, so I started, I think I registered my business name in 2016, and I still had a full-time job, so wedding filmmaking was very light on the side, and definitely didn't see myself, you know, doing it full-time or anything. It was just a fun little passion project. So I think I had maybe 6 weddings that first year, you know. But with that said, I was doing music beforehand, so again, it was another side hustle. I was performing live music at ceremonies, and then I started doing like cocktail hours, and I got to the point where I was thinking, I have all this PA equipment here, I should just DJ. I'm already here, you know, I should just figure this out. And so I contacted one of my buddies, he was a DJ, and he gave me his entire library. Didn't know what to do with it. I was a terrible DJ, at least at first. And so I started DJing weddings a bit, And it's funny, it's come full circle because now I'm here chatting with you, but it was literally a Forestry Films video that I stumbled upon on YouTube. And I'm sure you've heard this like a million times, but like you were like the godfather of like wedding filmmaking, I feel like. So anyways,
I'm just an old wrinkly godfather.
So yeah, I mean, I just found myself watching, you know, your videos, and I was on a deep dive, and I was like 8 videos in and just bawling my eyes out. And it really like, you know, took me back to my childhood too, where my dad documented everything growing up. Like we had a camcorder as early as I can remember. And my parents were, you know, Vietnamese immigrants, and they had no money. You know, they were sleeping on the floor of an apartment when they first came over to America. Wow. And, but my dad, he was just like a video photo guy. And so he always made it a point and prioritized that. And, you know, and maybe a large part of it too, was that like, they had to leave a lot of that behind when they came here. So yeah, like home videos was just like in my blood. And so when I saw it's just a very well curated highlight film, I was like, this exists. This is really cool. And so like many other people, you know, we have sort of the same journey. We're like, oh, I think I can do this. Like, let's just bring a camera and figure it out. And so, yeah, that's sort of where it got started. And so I've been full time almost 3 years now. I left my hospital job. I was a business data analyst. Very
very extremely sexy job.
Yeah, exactly. It was a great job. I had a great boss, but I just, you know, I mean, you understand, like you work in this space, like there's just this really great passion and for connecting with people and storytelling. That's like, you just can't beat it. So as good of a job as I had, like as secure as the benefits were, I just talked to my wife and was like, I really like this. What do you think? And she's like, if you can make it work, like I trust you. So with that sort of like support.
And that jump was, were you doing like paid wedding work while you were still working your job? Or did you just make a clean cut? Like how did you, because I know a lot of people are in your shoes where they're like, I have this thing, I really want to do this. How did you do it? Was it scary? Were there any pitfalls of doing it too soon? Or like...
Right. That's a solid question. For me, I just worked nonstop. And so I was charging. The first couple was like nothing. But then I started charging and I was just pocketing it all. And I would invest into my business. And then I think maybe like the 2.5 years in, I was actually making decent money and I still had a full income, you know, from my day job. And so I just had a really big savings. And so when my second son was born, I asked my wife, I was like, so I can take off 3 months, like paternity leave, and I can use the money that I've saved from weddings to just be home with you and like help with both kids. And I gave her the option of, or I can maybe like use half the time, save the money for like a, you know, a rainy day or whatever, or vacation. She's like, no, just stay home with me. She's like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And so, so I'm like, all right, sounds good. And so I stayed home for 3 months and like, you know, saw my son grow up, like those first like incredible moments. And it was also a time where I tested the waters to see like, okay, if this was my full-time job, like, you know, what does my day-to-day look like? And it worked out. I was like, I think I can do this. And so I had sort of an exit plan. I said, okay, you know, 9 months from now, I'm going to quit my job and I'm just going to save up money. So I saved up almost a year's worth of income, like a bit of money, at least to cover my mortgage. And so when I finally took that leap, it didn't feel scary because I was like, if no one books me for like 6 months, you know, I can go find a job.
I'll be okay. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll go back to DJ.
Yeah, or Uber Eats, you know, whatever.
Amazing at that.
Yeah. So, and obviously like that was, you know, not in the cards. Like it was going to be successful, or at least like I was going to have some business. Like it was just not realistic for me to not book at all. And so,
I think like the lesson there for people that are kind of, because it's weird for some reason, I feel like a lot of filmmakers are working in the medical field before. I've talked to a few, which is weird. I don't know why it's like a bridge, but it seems like the takeaway is if you are at a full-time job, you know, and you do want to do this full-time, don't just leap off the cliff, really have a solid plan. Like I think having at least 6 months to a year where you could jump and say, hey, I can at least give this a trial run and not jump and say, well, if I don't book 5 weddings before the end of this month, then I'm out. It's kind of like you're setting yourself up for failure. So always having that plan in place.
Right, exactly. And the beautiful thing of, you know, having a source of income is that you can raise your prices a lot more aggressively. I felt like I just knew where my work sat in my market. And I was like, I'm going to raise it like $500 a day. And then like I had two more bookings.
Because you didn't need.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't need it. And so I was raising my prices so aggressively in the beginning to the point where I was able to save a lot faster, you know, and it just like the momentum was just going and I felt really good about it. So, yeah.
Wow. I actually love that. Because, yeah, one thing I say, and if anyone's listening to this, they've listened to the past couple podcasts, I think I mentioned it, but having a full-time job as you build your business could actually be one of the biggest blessings. And a lot of people see it as a curse. Like, I can't wait to go. But like what you just said, I've seen it time and time again. If you have your bare necessities covered, you don't have that fear of raising your prices 500, 1,000, because if you don't get the booking, you're still going to be able to pay your mortgage. And it's like, so key.
Absolutely. Oh, I was going to say, like, you know, invest in your website and like get your branding right. Like, there's just so little risk, I guess. The only other side of that is like you're working a lot. Like, I was very tired.
Did you find any way to balance that, like, ever? Or was it just like, man, this is just the season?
I was on a high, you know, and like that's that's what got me through it. Honestly, I was like, I love weddings. Like, I get to travel. I think early on, I got to go to New York for like an elopement, and it just tickled me. Like, I was just like, this is a thing. Like, I could travel. And yeah, so I was, yeah, not a lot of sleep, but, you know, eventually paid off. So
how long did you do that for? Like, just kind of
I mean, yeah, a couple of years probably. Year wasn't too bad, but I would say like my like 2.5 years in, I was like starting to get pretty busy.
If you were to do it again, like knowing what you know now, would there be anything you would do differently to maybe not be as tired during that
season? I would be more selective on who I took on to like maybe represent my brand a bit better from the get-go, because I think I was just excited to book anything. And I did get tired when, you know, it just like wasn't the type of wedding that I would normally shoot or like that I wanted to shoot in the end. And so like I think just being more intentional about my time and like really, and it's not even like they were bad weddings, but it was just like I just wanted to take on fewer weddings so that I could really feel out my storytelling and like take the time to like discover that. But I mean, if I would have done anything differently, I don't know. I feel like it's gone well, so I can't talk bad about it. I'm tired, but you know.
But you're like, I'm tired parent, doing what so. I love. I mean, is that right? Yeah. It's just like comes with the territory. No, dude, I love that. And like, it's just so cool seeing kind of your whole journey. And you started out kind of having this full-time job, and then you switched to full-time weddings, and then you did that one elopement in New York, and you're like, man, I caught the bug. And what I'm curious about, because I go on your Instagram and dude, you're everywhere. You know, you're in Tulum, you're in Mexico, you're on a cliff on the edge of the world, and I'm interviewing you in your office right now, and like none of that's around. I know one of the big questions for filmmakers is, man, okay, I get the general concept of people finding me and booking me for a wedding film. I understand that, but I'm just stuck. I'm stuck in Kansas doing barn weddings. I see, you know, all these amazing filmmakers traveling, and I just feel so stuck. I don't know how to go from barn weddings to Big Sur. Like, it just seems like such an astronomical jump for me, and I just don't know how to do it. So like, first, how did you do that? How did you make that transition? And then how would you recommend kind of people doing that if they are like, they have nothing, they have no destination work?
Yeah, that's the $1 million question. Everyone wants to travel, right? Because it's so exotic and exciting, and to know that someone values you that much to pay you to go somewhere, it hits, you know? So yeah, for me, thinking back, I don't know. I think I got lucky. I got really lucky. But what I would recommend for a lot of people is like, I mean, we hear this saying all the time, you shoot what you show, right? So let's start there. Like, you shoot what you show. And another like humble reminder is that a lot of couples don't really understand how traveling with video gear works. Like, it's like,
you don't like just pop it in a backpack and you're good to go.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of them might think like, oh, it's a lot of gear. Like, would he be willing to travel, you know, or like, is that even in his wheelhouse? I actually had a couple. They were looking at venues in my local area. And I was like, yeah, just let me know. And then 2 weeks later, she reached back and was like, hey, we're thinking about actually having an intimate wedding in Oahu. Like, would you be willing to fly out there? And when she asked that, it was like such a light bulb moment for me. I was like, what do you mean? Yes, I will be.
I'm there right now. I don't understand.
I was much more like calm and collected at the time, but I was like, like, absolutely. And, you know, I think the reality is, you know, most of us want to travel, and like transporting gear is like the least of our worries, you know? So just like showing that you travel, you know, whether that's for business or for personal, just show that you're out there. It's funny, like the Portland airport, we had, okay, it's weird to say it now, but we had like iconic carpet.
This is a safe space. All right. Just share all your most intimate, deep feelings and moments.
So this is like a Portlandia episode, but like we had carpet at the Portland airport that like people just went crazy over because it was just, we had it for so long. It was like iconic, like there's a pattern right on it. And they were doing all these remodeling throughout the whole airport. And they were saying like they were getting rid of it, and people were freaking out. So people started making t-shirts and like whenever someone would travel, they would take a picture of their feet, like at, like with the carpet, like with the iconic, like symbol or the pattern. So like whenever I travel, I do the, you know, obligatory like carpet shot, and just to like show that I'm going on a plane, all of that stuff. And it just showed people that I, you know, like that's in my wheelhouse. And so,
so if you want to book destination work, find an airport with a really rad carpet and start taking pictures and posting on your story. And before you know it, you're going to have a Tulum wedding.
Good go tips. Yeah. Exactly. And I guess another actual practical tip is just like, you know, if you're going to be traveling, you know, for fun or whatever, just book a shoot out there. Just get content and then make sure you're using locations when you post that content, using hashtags. It's crazy the amount of people that have connected with me, because I'm like, how'd you find me? Like, oh, hashtags. I'm like, people
really?
Yeah, people use that. I'm like, yeah, they do, because they don't know where to start. So they're just like, you know, Yosemite elopement videographer or whatever.
And the hashtags you do are that simple. So just like, if you're in Yosemite, let's say, your hashtags would be Yosemite, Glacier Point, Yosemite elopement photographer, Yosemite elopement videographer.
Or Glacier Point videographer too, you know, like, stuff like that. But I mean, if you, like, you have to peel it back and think, like, from the couple standpoint, you know, what would they search? They're not going to search anything very specific. It's very simple, like Bay Area videographer or, you know, Yosemite videographer. So yeah, I mean, I've gotten lucky a few times that way, but I don't know if I have any other tips.
Well, that's really good though, because I think what I hear you saying is actually kind of, it kind of turns the tables, because a lot of people see destination work, as I kind of set up the question, as this big otherworldly thing that they have to, you know, do all these steps to get this amazing Yosemite wedding or Big Sur wedding. But the more I talk to filmmakers, and even in my own, you know, films, the way it happened for all of us wasn't this big old master plan. It was just simple things over time and just being prepared. And so like what I hear you saying is, hey, it's as simple as, if you have no destination work currently, go on trips, like just travel the world and post about it on your Instagram. Because people will be like, oh, he loves to travel. Maybe he would do my wedding. Like, it's that simple. And then when you do that wedding, share it. like split it up into as many little clips so that most of your Instagram is populated by it. Do a ton of BTS of you traveling to that wedding, coming back to that wedding, talking about that wedding, doing little hashtags. And then at the end of the wedding, be like, hey, couple, you love your film. Anyone else that you know is traveling? And just do that. Once, twice, three times, and then you have, you know, Good Coast Studios.
I mean, as soon as you travel a couple places, it really blossoms, and I noticed that firsthand. And so, but yeah, to what you're saying, you know, you don't have to earn your stripes. Like, it's not like a ranking, you know, like, oh, now I'm at the destination tier. No, it's literally just, you just gotta manifest it yourself. And so to that point too, it's funny. I did one wedding in Ohio and I've consistently gotten leads out there, and like, it's not my first destination, but like, I've done a good amount of weddings out there, you know, that paid actually really well because I guess there was a need for like a videographer, you know, that had more of my style out there, and they paid me, you know, good money to head out there. And so
it just takes one.
Yeah, exactly. I think I worked there. I've shot there, I don't know, 5 times in the past couple of years.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
gosh.
It's a lot, but
you're like, no more.
I don't have any this year. Yeah. But some of my like people's favorite videos are from Ohio. It's kind of funny. So yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. It's something about your face. Just Ohio people are just like, it's man, the O, this exotic okay, man coming in here. Mr. O from Ohio man. Oh man, I love it. And then like, okay, so I've traveled a lot for my work and done international stuff. And I mean, even I'm curious because I'm always struggling with just like travel tips with gear is always like, it's always a hassle. And I remember as I was first a videographer, I wanted to travel because of course it's fun. People, like you said, value to travel to these places. But after a while, it's become so much, and this is crazy to say because when I first started, all I wanted to do was travel. But now it's become so much of a headache a lot of times. And now I have a daughter and then I have to like get sitting for her and like all this stuff that I'm very selective about where I travel. And when I do, I'm always looking for ways to make it more seamless. So since you do travel a lot, let's start with like in the States. What are some, you know, tips that you have for traveling with gear and making it not as stressful?
Yeah. Great topic. I love this topic. I mean, first things first, TSA pre-check, like you have to have it. It just,
I don't.
Oh my gosh.
Well, cause I haven't traveled a lot in like the last 6 or so months. I need to get it. And I'm so lazy, but yeah, keep talking. You're
you're like, good. I know, yeah. Chris. Yeah. No, but like it takes sort of like the parts I dislike most from traveling in an airport, like away. I've, you know, especially going through some of the large airports like JFK, Portland can get bad at times, but I mean, it saved me like 45 minutes sometimes, you know, and like not taking off your shoes, not taking out your gear. I literally have all my gear in my bag, just shove it in. Like I put my phone in my backpack too, just have everything in there, and I don't open anything up. And, you know, there's a lot of gear, but they don't even whiff at it. And I go on my way and it's so fast.
That is awesome. Yeah. Because I can't tell you how many times I've traveled and they think my Pelican case is a nuclear bomb and they put it through and immediately like you see the TSA people, their eyebrows go into the back of their neck or something. It's just like yeah. So freaking high. And then they open it up really slowly as if it's radioactive. And like, what is this? And it's a lens and like they had never seen it before. Yeah.
It's awesome. Funny story, well, maybe not too funny, but when I was a kid, like this is like pre-9/11, like pre like high security at airports. We went through TSA and they were checking out my dad's camcorder. And my older brother thought it was real funny to say, it's a bomb.
Oh my gosh. Did you get jumped on the spot? Gosh.
No, luckily he was like, you know, like a young teen. And so like they just looked at it like closer, like for an extra 10, 15 minutes. But it's just like the worst thing you could do.
And TSA pre-check, is it hard? Like what's the how was it pretty quick for you to get into that program?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, really quick.
Like what did you do? What's the process?
Yeah, go online, register, and then you pick a location where you interview at, and they're all over town. And go to your appointment. There was like no line there. And it was maybe 5 minutes. They just ask you your name, like where you've lived, they get your fingerprint and take your picture and you're on your way. Like it's so fast. And then within 5 days you can use it. Like you can use your TSA number. Yeah.
Well, I am the biggest idiot because I thought it was this big old long process that's like full on grilling of questions and all this. And I think that's why. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Iraq, I'm sorry. It's just, yeah. Okay. Well, that's really, really good to hear. Cause yeah, I've heard that from a couple other filmmakers and it sounds like it's kind of a no-brainer. So that, and then as far as Do you bring any less gear when you travel? Do you, like, is there a special travel kit that you have, and how do you kind of go about that?
Yeah, I would say overall, I've just slimmed down on my gear, whether I'm working a local wedding or I'm traveling. I guess the only exception would be if, like, if I know I'm shooting an elopement, and so I don't need to bring, like, my light stands or whatever. But no, I travel pretty light in general. I carry, like, a couple, like, 2 to 3 bodies. Like, sometimes I don't even bring the third because...
Human bodies?
Just the limbs, like, not the whole body.
Yeah. Right, right, obviously more minimal that way. You don't have to deal with organs and things like that.
Yeah, minimalist, yeah. Yeah, I mean, so for, like, large weddings, I'll just have a roller, like, think tank bag, which has my lights, light stands, a couple, like, travel tripods. And sometimes I'll stuff my clothes in there so I don't have to carry, like, another, like, checked bag. And then I'll have a Pelican or a Peak Design backpack and then maybe a personal bag. And that would be, like, the very max. Like, oftentimes for intimate weddings or, like, elopements, it's just, like, my backpack and, like, a roller or something like that.
Do you find that for, like, because what I've realized for elopements, it's kind of hard is, so I have my Pelican case that I'll bring for every wedding. And then I have, like, my little 3-lens Ona shoulder bag. But then elopements, oftentimes, it's like, oh, we're going to the cliff 4 miles away, right? And then you're trying to drag a Pelican case through rock and grass and, like, all that. Like, what have you found? Do you kind of, like, how do you, for elopements and traveling, do you have a lighter bag that you carry that allows you to, like, trek with the couple further and not have to drag the Pelican case? Like, what do you do for that?
Right. Yeah, I have basically the entire Peak Design catalog.
Okay, wow. You're a poster boy.
It's so bad that they've sent me 2 separate occasions, like, a gift card for, like, thank you so much for your loyal business. I'm like, oh my gosh.
You're like a shareholder at this embarrassing. Point. We'll talk about that. So Peak Design, I haven't delved into the system, but I know people love it. So I kind of want you to fanboy a little bit if you do like it, because it could help a lot of people.
Yeah, they just make really quality products. Like, the materials just feel so nice, and they've just never disappointed me. Like, every product that I've ever purchased from them has just worked great. And yeah, I mean, it just really comes to that. Just, like, it's just a super reputable company. Their travel backpack is amazing. I just feel like it's super modular. It carries so much. It's deep. It looks nice. It's comfortable. And I've had a lot of backpacks in my days, and they all work great. But I just always come back to Peak Design products, and, like, their packing cubes are amazing. Like, they're super high quality.
Have you tried, do you have the tripod?
I have 2 Peak Design travel tripods, 1 carbon.
Okay. I want to talk to you about that. Cause I've kind of been on the fence with the travel tripod. I have the Manfrotto Be Free tripod, which is the one I recommend to everyone, but it's kind of janky at the same time. Like, it's really good for, like, there's really no other competition besides the Peak Design. But Peak Design is pretty expensive. So how's the height? That's my first question. Like, how's the height on the Peak Design tripod? Do you find it good for elopements and regular wedding ceremonies?
Yeah, I was surprised how tall it is. I think it might be taller than the Be Free.
Really?
I can't remember. Okay. I can't remember.
But you've never had an issue.
But it's never been an issue. Yeah, I'm always like, I don't even use the max height.
Okay, well, that's key. So I feel like, guys, if you're listening, because I've been on the fence for the Peak Design tripod. Guys, if you're looking for an awesome, well, now hearing that, the height is no issue. Yeah, guys, get the Peak Design tripod because it collapses into next to nothing. And it's literally the perfect tripod for traveling, for going on planes, for going on elopements, because with a Peak Design backpack or anything that has, like, a tripod strap, you could easily just slap it on the side.
Exactly. And I will say, like, the carbon fiber one is a bit more expensive, but if you do a lot of elopements and you're hiking, that half pound, like, weight savings is actually huge to me. Like, cause I have the aluminum one and I have the carbon fiber, given one's, like, you know, hundreds of dollars more, but it is a lot heavier. It's, like, very noticeable. And so, yeah.
Huh. I'm curious about that. Cause I was looking into the same thing, carbon fiber, aluminum. Wow. I butchered that word. Anyways,
aluminium,
everyone knows what I'm
David.
Talking about. Yes. Because what I found, so interestingly enough, I would actually prefer the heavier tripod but I don't know, maybe I'd love to hear your opinion on this, because I do so many elopements where it is on a cliff and it's not windy, but then when you get there, it's just ridiculous. And that extra weight could kind of help stabilize the shakes. Or is it as simple as you have your backpack, you could just throw it on the tripod and there you go?
Yeah, there's a hook on the bottom of it that you can just anchor it with your backpack. And so, yeah, if it ever came to that, which I've never had to, but yeah, that's the best solution, I think.
I love this. Okay, and is there anything else like that tripod where when you're traveling either on a plane or for an elopement that's kind of been a game changer for you in terms of either like a gear or process that you do?
Gear-wise, nothing comes to mind. I did have another travel tip, though. Fly with like one airline and like get on their rewards program, because once you hit tier on any of them, it's just... you start reaping the benefits. Like as soon as I hit tier with like MVP gold tier with Alaska, I was upgraded to first class. I don't even know how many times. Like my first five flights, I think four of them were upgraded to first class. I get priority boarding now anytime I, you know, purchase cabin. I get two free check bags. Like there's just so many benefits. But the biggest one actually was when I went to Mexico. I actually brought my family with me and my parents. And, you know, when you go abroad, you have to like actually check in your passport at the desk. Like you can't just do online checking. And we can go in the VIP line. And the other line was at least 45 minutes. And there was no one in the VIP line. I just shuttled my family up and they just thought I was the coolest person. They're like, wow, Chris is the travel like expert over here. But it felt so nice. We just saved so much time and like in stress of just standing there with my kids, like in line, like.
And how many flights did you have? Because like I hear VIP status, I'm thinking, well, that's like 7 years out or whatever. Like how long did it take you to reach that level?
Probably like a couple of years. But I would say the first year I didn't travel a ton. And the other thing too is like they don't expire. Like if you constantly travel with one airline, they just save it, you know, because it's like it's unless you don't travel with them for like a number of years, then it starts to drop off. But like.
And you like Alaska? Would you go with Alaska again? Or is it just because that's what you've always gone with?
If you are on the West Coast, Alaska is hands down the best. I'm like sponsored by Alaska and Peak Design guys. So Alaska just rolled out a subscription plan. A lot of people haven't heard of it, but you pay like a monthly fee. And if you travel along the West Coast a lot, and also like Vegas, I think is included in there because it's a big hub. But if you travel a lot, definitely worth looking into. I think the lowest package is you pay $50 a month and then you get a certain amount of credit per month. And then once you get one full credit, you get a flight. And so it ends up like working out where it's actually a bit cheaper as long as you know that you're flying regularly. And they have like higher tiers too, so.
Right. Huh. That is really, really cool. I can't wait till flying is just so... because. I mean, we have Uber, we have car, like all this stuff. Flying's still kind of expensive. It's still cheaper than it was, but man, for it to be $100 anywhere in the US, that would just be amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like it could get there. I don't know.
Do you know about Scott's Cheap Flights?
No, what's that?
there's another service. I can't remember the name of it, but there's a couple services like this. It's an email service, essentially. So you pay a yearly subscription. I think it was like $35 for a year. And then you say where you're flying out of. And then you say maybe like your ideal, you know, destinations. And so it basically scours the internet and it looks at trends. And as soon as like there's a hot deal, it'll email you. And like, and it's only like crazy deals too. Like, and you're talking like hundreds of dollars of savings to like France or like wherever.
So if you have a wedding 8 months out, you could put in that destination and just wait.
It's a little rare to like be that like pre-planned with it all. It's more of like, if you're able to travel on a whim, this would be like a cheap way to go. But with that said, like if you're looking just to travel for personal, just to get content or whatever, you can go to some really exotic locations for pennies. I mean, like the other day, I think it was like France for, I want to say like $300, $400, which is like...
wow, because that's normally like $1,000 ticket,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. And what it will do is it'll say like, you have, like this deal's going on, you might have 3 days before it goes away. And then these are the dates that you would be looking at. So it like kind of breaks it down, like, you know, so you have to make decisions fast. But if you don't have ties and you're able to just kind of leave on a whim whenever, it's a great option.
Oh, I love that. Because, what we talked about is if you're on, like, hey, I have no destination work, using Scott's cheap flights or a service like that, you could just kind of like, I need to travel, I don't have a lot of money, I'm starting my business, but you could use that and then travel probably three or four places, build up a portfolio of just personal stuff, and then you could get your own paid stuff later.
Right, exactly.
No, I love that. And then kind of one of the last things on travel, because it's always a question that comes up for people is, have you done any, you did Mexico, so you did international.
Mm-hmm.
What was the process there? Because I've done a couple international, and it's just, it's always nerve-wracking. I know every country is a little different. I don't know if you have any tips other than just pray and luck and just... If there's, because I remember the first time I did a wedding in Canada, I was freaking out. Like I had to print out receipts of every single one of my gear purchases that I was bringing to Canada, because I was freaked out that if they detained me, they were going to want to see invoices, everything to make sure I'm not smuggling it into the country. Like the groom who I was shooting for actually worked for the government, and I had him like hand ask the like parliament or whatever if it was okay for me to come in, and I was all flipped out. So what are some, if you have any, I know it's a case by case basis, but if you have any tips for traveling internationally, I'd love to hear those.
Yeah, man, I'm probably not the best person to ask, but
one really is.
Yeah, I will say definitely like look ahead of time, because it can take a long time to get work visas or anything like that if you're going to do it the right way. But I will say in general, though, when I am going abroad, I pack really light. And if I need to source like lights and tripods or stands there, I'll do that. That way I'm just bringing like two bodies. So like Mexico, if you bring less than two bodies, like they're not going to pull you over essentially. And I'm comfortable just shooting with two bodies. Like that's fine with my workflow. But yeah, I've never had issues. I do know with Canada, though, they're pretty strict. They don't like us doing work up there. And so I actually have an elopement out that way this summer. I plan on just packing really light and not bringing my rig or anything and, being a tourist. So
when you said sourcing tripods, and is that what you did for Mexico?
Yeah, the last time I was there, it kind of worked out serendipitously. There was a filmmaker out there that bought a workshop, like a one-on-one workshop with me. And so I asked him, like, hey, man, and he's really talented. And I was like, do you want a second shoot with me? And like, I was like, if you can bring lights and stuff, he's like, yeah, absolutely. And so that made my life easy.
That's actually a really brilliant move. It's like, hey, if you're going international, try to get a second shooter out there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You could bring it's a super genius idea.
I have a gig in Switzerland, and I haven't asked him yet, so maybe he'll listen to this podcast. But, but there's a guy out there. He messages me all the time, and we just talk gear and stuff. And I'm going to ask him to see if he can help me out with lights, and hopefully he's available that day, or at least help me out just sourcing me some from a buddy or a store or whatever.
That's actually a really, really brilliant move. Yeah, I love that. And then for Canada, one thing that, because I'm sure there's going to be people listening to the podcast like, oh, Canada, how do you do that? Or other countries that are really strict. So in my research for Canada, a couple of things I found out that were really helpful that might help you too.
Take notes,
I don't know. traveling. One was like the biggest change I made for international travel was not traveling with my Pelican case. Because that just, the TSA sees that and they see, oh, you are working. You are here for work. And you don't even have to say anything, and it immediately gets you flagged and into all these issues. So what I switched to was a Think Tank International Airport Security V2 bag, and it looks just like a suitcase. And like noticeable difference in terms of how the TSA treated me, how the customs officers treated me with something that literally looked like a suitcase. Because when you go to customs, they don't actually scan your bag. They just look at you and you answer some questions. And so they looked over, and I just went to them. They were like, oh, it's a suitcase. And so they weren't like, oh, so what are you here for? And blah, 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 blah. So that was a huge tip for me. And then what I found out in Canada, so you do need a work visa for pretty much any work that you do out there. But there's a stipulation. I don't know if it's still there, but I went to the Canadian government's website. And for weddings, there's actually ways to get in without a work visa. So for weddings specifically, there's a section on the Canadian government website that says services performed at weddings. So if you go to Canada as a performer for a wedding, then you don't need a work visa. So if you're performing like as a violinist or a pianist or a singer or a DJ, and I talked to my friend who works for the Canadian government, and I was like, could I perform? Am I like performing video? And he's like, technically, yeah, that would fall into the same category. So when I went to Canada in front of their customs officers, as weird as it sounded, and they looked at me kind of funny, they're like, oh, what are you here for? And I was like, well, first, I'm here for my friend's wedding, you know? And that's a key thing. You always want to say it's for a friend, not that I'm, oh, I'm shooting something for a client. That's always like a red flag. And I also made sure that I had the couple send me an invite to their wedding. So it was like I'm a friend attending their wedding. So that's what I said. Oh, I'm attending a wedding and I'm performing videography at the wedding. I said those exact words. And so like weird. All that stuff, it was kind of weird. But then they're like, okay, cool. And then they let me through. And so that was a really interesting, I don't know, loophole or thing that I found. But yeah, if you're traveling internationally, you always kind of want to look up what is the stipulations in that area, because it could be kind of crazy.
Yeah, that's a great tip. I love that. I'm going to take notes. Well, I'll just watch this again. Yeah.
Right. Chris is going in. I'm attending a two-person
elopement. My name is David. I mean,
right. You let him in 2 years ago. Yeah. Here's his picture. Do you remember? Nice. No, I love it. Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, those are all awesome travel tips, because I know myself included, travel is always a beast, especially internationally. So all that super, super helpful. And then the other kind of question I had is maybe taking more of a turn is, so travel's awesome and booking those weddings are incredible, but it's a whole other thing of how you like get those people interested in you to then book those weddings. I mean, it's the whole wedding filmmaker dilemma kind of thing. And I'm a huge proponent of one of the main ways you get really rad couples is, yes, awesome work. But I think just as important, if not more important, is that they feel comfortable with who you are as a person. And they're actually purchasing in a weird way, like you. They want you more than they want your work. And I think when that switch happens, when they actually want you more than they want your work, you can start charging even more than you wildly thought was possible. But that's so hard because so many people are terrified of showing themselves, or they don't even know who they are as people, so they don't even know what they would show. And one thing, Chris, that like impressed me so much with you and your whole brand and that I've been following for the last couple of years and kind of going on your Instagram before we did this podcast was you're just unashamedly in front of the camera on your Instagram. Like for those of you guys listening, I went on to Good Coast Studios Instagram and he has stories of all the amazing places he's been. But then he also has one story of him just singing like Valentine's Day cards to the camera. And then he's doing reels that aren't like, because reels kind of terrify me in a sense of all I see are just these really bubbly girls that are just like jumping up and down with like, you know, crazy like Anthropology decor behind them, all bright lights. And I'm just like, I can't do that. And Chris is just in front of the camera, just being himself, showing, I don't know, little things. Anyways, the point I'm making is you show yourself and you don't look nervous about it. And I think that's one of the big reasons that couples book you. So I kind of want to talk about that. And maybe you could break that down is, why do you do it? And what was the process? Was it just like, oh, I'm just going to do it? Or was there any fear? How'd you get over that?
Yeah, super great question. And to your point, this is something that I talk about a lot and I preach a lot. It's that, you know, couples might like your films, but they need to fall in love with you. And yeah, I mean, the easiest way is to show your face and to share a bit of your story. I think for me, I don't know, not much phases me. So it comes naturally for me where I'm to the point where, you know, I just share anything and just to be sort of top of mind, and I share my highs and I share my lows, you know, and I feel like when you do that, it, in a weird way, it just builds trust with my audience. I mean, if you followed me long enough, like, I mean, I've obviously have shared my successes with my business, but I also recently went through some like really hardships with my son's health, and like I shared all of that, and it's weird, you know, sharing it to that, like, thousands of people on Instagram, but I don't know, it's just my story, and I'm not, maybe it's TMI for some people, but I just don't care. Like, I just want people to know, like, what I'm going through, you know, that I'm a person that they can relate with, you know, that we all go through struggles and we all through highs. And so for me, I just don't filter anything. If I think something's interesting enough to show. I mean, I've shown things like I was making salsa, and apparently I was like I was using the lime juicer wrong, and people blew up my DMs and like, you have it backwards. But it was like, it was the most hilarious.
You got to plug the juicer in, Chris.
Yeah. And so I just like made it a thing. So like the next time I made it, I was like, okay, I'm doing it the right way, guys. But just, I don't know, just anything like that. But I will say this though, like, not everyone is gonna like have that sort of like desire to show their life like that. And I completely respect that. And I've seen people do it in really creative ways where they still stay relevant without wearing the heart of their sleeve or whatever. And so, you know, you could, instead of a video of you talking, because maybe you don't like hearing your own voice, like, just show a photo, or maybe just like some beautiful images and write like a thought-provoking caption, or just like show activities that you're doing. You just need to provide something that like gives someone else to latch onto, something that they can relate with. Like I did a stories on like my like terrible latte art, and people love that, you know. And like I put a question on there, like, okay, what do you think this looks like, you know? And it was just hilarious and fun and so random, but like, yeah, I just don't overthink it, I guess. Yeah, I don't know, is that helpful?
That's really, really helpful. I think the whole idea of not overthinking it, because I think the big reason why people get scared is, oh no, if I put my face on there, there's going to be something that's going to deter a potential bride, and I have to be this way or that way or the whole thing. And what's so cool about your brand is, I think the right way to do it is, you have to be really intentional with your filmmaking. Like, that has to be the main thing, I think, that you really show, and that's like, hey, this is a wedding film brand. Because I think you could go the opposite way and it's like, oh, all I'm showing is personal stuff, and then a couple weddings things, and there's a little bit of a disconnect. But I think if you've built a solid, solid brand, to have 10 to 20% of your content personal related, that's not at all related to weddings, but it is, because people are going to have you on the most intimate day of their lives. And I think that's something that filmmakers need to think more about, is we're behind an editing desk so much, and we see our Instagram always, because we're constantly checking it. We see other filmmakers' Instagrams, that we think the service we're providing is wedding films. And which is crazy to say, that's half of it, if not less, of what we're actually providing. Because there's people that would wish, and probably in tears, that they can't be at this person's elopement, if closest friends and family, but like, somehow you are there. And so for a couple, like, they're not just hiring you, they're inviting you to like the most intimate moment of their entire lives. And I know for me, if I was to get, you know, married again, it would be, what would be more important to me is that I drive with them and they make me feel comfortable, because I want to enjoy my day. And honestly, it's weird being in the wedding industry for so long and shooting so many wedding films and seeing the best of the best wedding films. As I think about, like, man, if I was getting married today, like, what would really matter to me being on both sides? And it's like, man, I would more so care about having a really solid person. And of course, the film's important to me because I'm a filmmaker, but being a filmmaker, for me to say that, like, I think how much more does a couple value just the person? And so, yeah, just showing yourself 10 or 20%, like Chris said, if you're not, because I talk to so many people and they're like, but I'm not an extrovert and I'm not like comfortable in front of the camera. I've seen so many talented photographers and filmmakers just, hey, a photo with a caption. I think showing your face in some way you should, and doing like a photo shoot with a talented photographer and just kind of bearing your heart about why you do films is so huge.
Exactly. And you know, and finding like the right photographer for that, like maybe find someone that's more like abstract or like does wider shots and like, you know, but like having yourself in it is super important, because that's what people latch onto. I mean, I'm sure you're the same way, where like you go to someone's website, you go straight to their about me section, right? So it's like, yeah.
When I always tell people, like, your personality and who you are is the tiebreaker between if a couple is looking at two companies and their work is by and large very similar. Because we're not there yet, but we're getting to the point where there's more and more talented filmmakers. And it's become easier to be a talented technical filmmaker with all the free education out there. And the most successful businesses usually are the ones that are most comfortable doing the uncomfortable things that other businesses aren't willing to do. And those are the ones that rise to the top. So it's become more comfortable to be technical and to have pretty films, but more uncomfortable to be authentic. So if you can do that, you will more than likely get the booking than this other.
Absolutely. That was beautiful. Thank you, David. No, I really, really, truly love that because you hit it right on the head. Like authenticity, being a real person, like reading the room, connecting with couples, like that's where the meat is. And, you know, and with my brand and like when I, you know, get on a call with the couples, like that's what I'm trying to convey. Like it's, you know, it's not like I use this gimbal or, you know, whatever, or like, I always say the films will be beautiful. Like I do this for a living. I understand lighting. I understand composition. It's scientific to me. Like it's something that you can go on YouTube and you can learn and you can practice, but the intangible things of like how much fun you had that day, how much you laughed that day, how much you cried, how many dad jokes you had to endure from me, you know, like those things are the things that really matter. And like that I want you to walk away with. So.
And do you say things like that on the call to the couple?
That's from my script, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. I say a very, very similar thing, and I think that's huge. I mean, I think that's the missing component of, yeah, there's a part of my call where I go over my packages, and I have a very similar line where I talk about the cameras and, you know, the filmmakers that are going to be there, but I say very similar thing. It's like, hey, but at the end of the day, all this stuff, it doesn't really matter. Like, again, you've seen the work on my site. It's beautiful. Like what my goal for you guys is when you're on a plane or driving back or wherever on your honeymoon, you're thinking back and saying, wow, it was so much fun hanging with David and the team. Like my day was better and more calm because of your presence there. And that's what I'm after. And so I think, yeah, as a filmmaker, when you're doing calls, trying to work in something like that of like, this is who I am. And of course, if it's a lie, don't do it. And if you're like, man, I need to become more like this. And kind of off of that, like what, have you always just been good around people at weddings? Has this come natural to you? Or is there certain things that you do that make people more comfortable or make yourself more comfortable on a wedding day with a couple?
Yeah. I don't know about on the day, but I think something that I've learned over time was just setting expectations and like having a really solid consultation call, because we don't interact with our couples that often to be honest. I mean, they book 9-12 months out or more. And so really nailing that call and really opening up and like having those heart to hearts and setting expectations, like this is how I work and this is how I like to shoot, where I kind of explain like the more of the natural posing and like that it's not like you guys aren't really performing in front of the camera. It's more of just, I just want you to be with each other, you know? And so like setting that groundwork has made such a difference. Like when I show up on the wedding day, or maybe, you know, we get dinner or something beforehand too, but like, but just it makes them feel safe. And I think creating, manifesting or harnessing that like safe environment is what's made my job and my storytelling a bit easier.
Dude, I love that. And then kind of, I right before this podcast, I had so many questions for Chris, but like, this has been so good. We just tackled a couple. I'm like, oh man, these are golden. Yeah. So I'm looking through my questions. I'm like, okay, which one do I want to like kind of be our last one?
Yeah.
So I have one, I'd say last semi-big one. And then I just want to ask you a couple quick ones near the end. But like one of the things I noticed with your work that I was just really impressed by was, like you said, how natural your couples feel during portraits specifically of them, where it's just, and for those of you listening who don't know, portraits is just, you know, the couple alone getting artistic shots with them. It's the best part of our job oftentimes, and also the most stressful part, because you're kind of, that's when you're performing the most as a filmmaker. So Chris, like what do you do to make that process easier, to make it, I'd say, more scientific to where you're like, okay, almost frequently I'm going to end up with good stuff. Like, what's your portrait process? How do you put couples at ease? How do you ensure that you get the stuff that is creative and artistic and that you're really excited about?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it starts with a consultation call. Like, I actually explain my process like early on just so that they are comfortable like to book me, you know, like this is how I work. But I explain to them that I don't need them to perform. I'm not doing poses. I'm not even doing prompting a lot of time. I will sometimes. It just depends on the wedding and the situation. But best case scenario is that you guys aren't performing. I'm really just going to put you in a place where I think has beautiful lighting or composition. And I just want you to be together. And I, you know, and whatever that looks like. So if you want to kiss or hold hands or, you know, hold each other, however that looks to you, it really doesn't matter. Because to me, the bigger picture is like how I'm composing it, getting different angles. I'm going to get a tight, a wide perspective angles. And then once I feel like I got what I needed, we just sort of move on. We go to the next thing. And then like, oh, I love how the light's hitting here. Like, do you mind standing here? And you really sort of lean into the art of photography and videography and understanding composition, understanding lighting. Because like once you sort of like really embrace that, it's less about like, okay, what's the next prompt I need to do? Or like, what do I need to make them do to like monkey in front of the camera so that like I can get content? It's more of just like stand over there. Like it's literally that easy. And to the point where I'm just so confident now when I show up to these portrait shoots where I'm just like, okay, like where's the light? Okay. I love like the architecture here. I think it would be fun to do something here. And just making sure I get multiple angles of it. And really like at the end of the day, we don't need a ton. I think photographers have more of a, like pressure to like fill up an album, and so they like need like a ton of shots. But I think with filmmaking, it's like as long as you get like a few like really solid shots and then have different multiple angles of it, it's pretty easy after that.
I love that. That's really, really good. Just the whole taking away all the stress of it and just showing up and trusting yourself that you can get what you need. So I'm very similar, especially for elopements. I know I can just be like, hey, couple standing, cool light. And usually because elopements are a lot less stressful and there's way more time, the couple feels way more comfortable doing who they're like. One of my favorite shots is actually on my website currently, is of the looping clip of this couple. The groom kind of like goes in for a kiss and then he caresses like the bride's cheek and brings her really close for a kiss. And it looks like, wow, that looks like a movie. Did you prompt him to do that? And it was just so simple as no, I just had him stand and looked at each other. And because they were so in love, he just was led to do that. And it's a beautiful moment. But then again, for my, usually most of the moments, those crazy beautiful moments happen on elopements because there's just so much more time. Because like all this sounds fantastic, but I know on a wedding day where it's like, okay, photographer's gone in for their thing. And then it's the couple's usually very just like, you know, like photographer, you're kind of switching back and forth. It's so hard to be like, okay, couple, just be you and stand in that light. And I'm just going to shoot around while the photographer is like right here. Like, okay, are you going to be done soon? Are you done soon? Like, how do you create that on a wedding, on a high stress wedding day? Is it even possible? And
I don't know. I think confidence has a lot to do with it, but I mean, one of the tricks I do with like photographers, like if you're truly running out of ideas and like you're kind of put on the spot, a trick I recommend often is piggyback off the photographer in a way where it's like, hey, do you mind if I get center after this? Like if it's a really symmetrical shot, like ask to get the center shot. And even though it wasn't like your shot or your idea, like it feels like you're participating a little bit more than rather than just being quiet and like off in the corner shooting it. And similarly, you know, hey, do you mind if I get a tight shot of this? Like when you're done, you know, so like you get that wide with them and then like you're also like coming up close. And so it's sort of like this piggyback approach, like if you truly don't have any ideas at all. But yeah, you're right. Like wedding days, they're a lot more stressful because of the timeline. And like, let's say you only have 15 minutes for golden hour portraits or something like that. And so I think, honestly, I think that's where the whole posing and prompting culture like was birthed, because they're like, I need to fill up an album. And like, how do I get the most out of my couple? Like you need to dance and twirl and pull them in and walk like you're drunk and all this stuff. And like, sure, like that's great. But you know, with that said too, my collections have an extra day now. Like I've automatically included them for weddings. For elopements, I don't need it, or intimate weddings, I don't need it. But for weddings, I have a a separate day built in there so that I do sort of get those portrait type shots, even if it's not from the wedding day.
I love that. And on that separate day, are they in their wedding clothes or is it?
They can be, but they often have not been.
Okay. And then that weaves into the film just, is it a separate film or do you weave that into the four whatever?
I weave it in.
Okay, you weave it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really it's cool. Just like extra footage that you can like you can sprinkle in. And so, and honestly, like I started doing it because I was already doing it. Couples were, they had seen it in my work and they're like, oh, we want to do the extra thing. And it just, again, you shoot what you show, you know? And it was like, I kept doing them like, why don't I just do this as a default? Because, you know, on a wedding day, you don't honestly know what you're going to get sometimes. And to have this to fall back on and just to have something really meaningful, like, I mean, it could be a rehearsal dinner or it could be, you know, something more structured, but it could also be something that's really thoughtful. Actually, just the other week, I filmed a wedding up in Seattle. It was a great wedding. The couple was fantastic. It was just a great day. Like nothing, you know, went bad, but it was just like, you know, your traditional wedding. But the next day we hung out together and we did some of their favorite things. Like we went to one of their favorite coffee ice cream shops. And then we walked and like got a view of Seattle at a park. And I still remember they had letters that they forgot to read to each other on the wedding day. And so we had planned to film that night as well. And so I had this idea where I was like, what do you guys think about like sort of like a rom-com scene where you guys are sitting in the front of a car and like just have like the lamps on in the front and then you guys are reading letters to each other. So I have an angle from the front of the car. Then I have like a couple side angles and they're like, yeah. Like we love that. And it was super private. Like we were just in some random street, like next to these like homes. And within 15 seconds in, she was bawling. And it was like, it was so special, right? Because like she was so present in that moment. And like that's what it meant to me, is like she was able to be present in this moment to like read her vows to him. And it was just so meaningful. So while their wedding was like so amazing, I just like this was the like the liquid gold, like the story that like really pushes the film to the next level. And so, yeah.
I love that. So like,
that was kind of a tangent.
No. That's amazing, is weaving in that extra day. Cause I've done that too. And I've gotten some of my best footage and it also takes, I think, the stress off you on the wedding day to where you don't feel like, man, I have to like, get everything. And then it makes the wedding day in the weirdest way, even though you're shooting more, it makes it more enjoyable. And of course it's something easily that you can weave into your package and make it more expensive. Cause for me personally, I don't love doing longer films, like 9 to 12 minute films. I used to do them. I've kind of strayed away from it. And now my biggest package used to be a 9 to 12 minute film, but now it's just a package that has like a 4 to 6 minute film, an extra day shoot. It's pretty basically like an engagement film thing. And it has all these extra stuff that I love doing, but doesn't result in me making this super long film.
Yeah. It's not more work. It's just more content, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Which is good for your brand and good for everything. So it all works out.
Yeah. It's just so much more fulfilling too. And like being able to connect with the couples on a different day. Like there's just like, there's no stress of the wedding. Like they feel like more like themselves. There's just so many wins to it. Honestly, I love it so much. So.
Oh, dude, I love that. Well, let's see. We're coming near the end. I want to do a couple little like lightning round of. I really have like two questions, but one is so one thing I noticed on your Instagram, which I'm always asking people, is your Instagram clips look so solid, so crisp. Is there, what export settings do you use? Do you use Premiere, Final Cut, and just kind of give me a quick rundown on that.
It's so hilarious because there's no secret sauce, okay? I use Final Cut and I use the 1080p like default export. But if you don't know, within Instagram, like deep in the settings, there's like allow HD uploads or like higher quality uploads, something like that. It's like, it's hard to find, honestly. I saw a reel on it like months ago and I turned it on ever since. And so... so maybe that's it.
And is it 1080? Is it 1080 by 720 or 1920 by 1080?
1920 by 1080, yeah.
Okay.
I find that like uploading 4K is terrible because it's like, it has to compress it, right? But yeah, I just export the 1080 and have that thing on. I also feel like color grading makes a subtle difference too. If you have more contrast in your images, it looks sharper. And that's just like a kind of subconscious thing. But yeah, I don't have any secret sauce other than that. Yeah.
No, I love it. I love it. That's perfect. That's right, exactly what I was looking for. Okay, the master sauce is no sauce, just default 1080 contrast. Yeah. Although the secret sauce could be potentially that HD upload thing, if it's actually like a thing. So yeah,
I've never tested it. Yeah, I don't know.
But you did check it on.
Yeah, it's on.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know where it is. So people are gonna be like, where is it? I'm like, I don't know. And then other quick lightning question is zooms or primes, and do you use both? Why? Kind of idea.
Yeah. I've lived in every camp possible. I started on Zoom.
Like, what do you currently use, I guess?
I currently use Zooms now because I just got the Tilta Mirage VND matte box. Have you seen this?
I've seen it on your reels. I mean, to me, I don't know. I didn't know it was a Tilta Mirage. I just knew it was a matte box. I was like, oh, that's a cool matte box, man.
Yeah. So it just came out. But so its thing is it has a VND in it, and it has a wireless control of variable and neutral density filter. So this particular one is special because it has a wireless control on it. And so the wireless control for me, it NATO clamps onto the side of my cage, and I can, it's like this big, like well dampened wheel, and it's from like 2 to 9 stops. I could be wrong. It's pretty far. It's like a big range.
Gotcha.
And yeah, it's just, it makes my Sony feel like it has built-in ND filters, like a variable ND filter, like the FX6. I love it so much. And if I don't need it, I can literally just slide it out. It's really easy. So with that said, I can't be changing primes often. I do miss my primes. So like during receptions or dancing or stuff like that, I'll usually just pop off the whole thing and then just use my 50. And but I used to shoot 35-85 and like quick sling, like swap. But now that I'm using this, it's zooms.
And the zoom is what, like an 18 to 35?
No, it is 28 to 75, the Tamron G2.
Okay, what's the f-stop on that?
F2.8.
Okay. Yeah. And have you found, because I shoot on the GH5's primes, but then I just got a Panasonic S1 and I slapped a 24 to 70 on there for my second shooter. And I was like, this is really nice to just be like 24, 70, 50, 35. Like, how have you found, are you unhappy at all with your shooting with a zoom versus the primes, like in terms of the image quality?
Yeah, that's a good question, because that was my like reservations before, because I was so just stuck on the look of primes. What I will say to that is like, you don't really notice a huge difference unless it's like a side-by-side, like truly. And I shot on X-T4, like the Fuji X-T4, which was a crop sensor for a while. And so that had less depth of field, you know, just the smaller sensor. And I was fine with it. And I was like, why? And when I went back to Sony, I was like, this is so blown out. Like shooting 1.4, I was like, what the heck is going on?
Yeah, like who would even ever dream to shoot at this
exactly,
low?
Exactly. And so, I mean, I've gotten used to it, obviously, but like, so yeah, I just think it's what you're used to. I will say though, now that I'm shooting with zooms again, I tend to try to stay at like the traditional focal lengths, because I used to find myself like not hunting, but going in and out a lot, because I didn't know where I wanted to be. And so now I'm like, okay, I'm either going to be like wide 35, 50, or all the way zoomed in. And that's sort of helped me organize my brain a little bit when I'm shooting.
Yeah, I'd say that's the trick. Like, I love zooms now because I've had all the training from primes before, to where I can use a zoom, I think, the best way possible, to where I'm at 24, 35, 50, or 70. I think you make the mistake as a new filmmaker not knowing what those focal lengths look like and just like hunting all around. And what will end up happening is your films will actually look worse, not because of the zoom lens itself, but because you're at weird, like 37 or like, yeah, like right. 29 focal length, and it's going to make people look odd. And the reason primes are so powerful is like a 17 looks good, a 25 looks good, for a 45, whatever, those traditional focal ranges make humans at the right positioning look really, really nice. So if you are on zoom, I would say, yeah, 24, 35, 50, 70 should be the ranges you go on your zoom. And stick to that, and you're going to be happy. Kind of an idea.
Yeah, no, and it just simplifies it
too. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I love it. Well, man, this has been incredible. We covered so much in like from travel to elopements to portraits to Zooms to Instagram settings. This has been insane and insanely awesome. And I kind of just want to cap the whole thing off. And I love asking this is you've been doing this for a couple years. Like, what would you have done differently knowing what you know now? Like, if you or you could either answer that or if you're just like, man, this is the one thing I'd love to like leave people with in terms of how they can improve as wedding filmmakers. So you can kind of go either way.
Work-life balance. last year was such a sobering year, but truly like balance, like the power of saying no, just so that you can start working on like, well, yourself, but like your creativity. I'm a firm believer in like doing creative films, like making time for that. And so, you know, that's something that I would highly recommend is just don't overwork yourself, like work on your craft, like serve your couples in the best way. Don't feel like you need to book 30 weddings a year or whatever that number is. Like you can do with less, and you know, the whole quality over quantity thing. Cause like I'm in a place now where like, you know, I'm in editing purgatory and like, and I have all these like awesome, fun, creative film ideas. And I just wish I had time to do that. Or I wish I had time to just like spend a little bit more on a wedding film, just like to experiment a little bit. Cause like at the end of the day, it's just, it's never ending. You know, the money is never ending. The work is never ending. Like, yeah. So pace yourself and work on you.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. That's so good. Yeah. Cause it's like, hey, you could have your dream bookings, all the weddings you want in the world, all the money you want in the world. But if you feel stressed and it's sucking all your joy, you're not going to enjoy any of it.
Right. Like I don't, it's kind of funny. Like I make way more money than I ever have and I'm able to do this for a living. So like, yes, that is the nice end of it. But I don't really feel that different than like the person I was when I first started. And I was like just like the fire was burning. Like it's still the same, you know, whether I'm charging $1,000 or, you know, whatever I'm charging now. So it's like,
so moral of the story, don't chase the money, chase the balance. And
yeah, exactly.
Cause you're going to feel pretty much the same.
Yeah, exactly.
with mm-hmm. I mean, of course having that 6 months is key, but beyond that, in terms of extra money and extra stuff, it's kind of like, yeah, it's really not that big of a high. And like, why waste your life chasing after that?
Right.
Idea. No, I love it.
Yeah.
Perfect, man. Well, this has been incredible. Where can people find you? What are you working on? Like, kind of just end it out.
Cool. Basically, Good Co Studios everywhere. So GOODCO Studios. What am I working on? A ton of client films, but
editing purgatory.
Yeah, editing purgatory. But I also do a lot of workshops and one-on-one workshops and mentorship calls as well. And looking to expand that a little bit more, like going forward, like 2023, but I don't know what that looks like yet. So we'll see.
Dude, love it, love it, love it. Well, Chris, this has been awesome.
Thanks for having me, dude. Like, I was going to say like, this is like super surreal just to be here talking with you and just like, yeah, it's really, really cool. Cause as you heard, the beginning of my journey started with you. So
it's kind of surreal for me too. I'm just like, wait, what? This is so weird. Cause like, I just found you know,
I
think a year or so ago or I don't know, something like that. And it's like, man, this guy's work so good. And then to hear like that you found me at first is just, yeah, it's mind blowing. Yeah. All right. Cool.
I love it all. So thank you again for having me.
All right, guys. Well, that wraps up today's episode with Chris from Good Co Studios. Definitely check out all his work in the links below in the show notes. And then just a reminder, our native video presets are out and they're only going to be out for the next week or so. So you're definitely going to want to nab them while you can. These are the presets, again, that I exclusively use along with hundreds of other wedding filmmakers. They're incredible. Check them out below. And when you click that native video preset link, you'll be able to go to a page where you can see a ton of before and afters and a lot more information about the presets. And then also we have our Instagram page, theactive.co. Be sure to give it a follow and I'll see you guys in the next episode.